The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
10 minutes after 8, looks like TikTok getting closer to a possible ban. You know, that court upheld a law that has been passed to try to force either a sale of TikTok. Yeah, they're calling it a threat. We have to talk with Congressman Benz about that here in a few minutes. I have a feeling he was one of those people that voted for that law. All right. 11 after 8, Vicky's here. Hey, Vicky, how's life in the Applegate this morning? Okay. Morning.
Well, yeah. I'm waiting for the sun to come up.
Hey, did you, by the way, did you feel yesterday's quake or not?
I didn't. I was in town. I had to do some errands.
Yeah.
But I have a really good friend that's in Charleston over in Coos Bay. And so I wasn't able to get a hold of her, but hopefully everything's okay over there.
Yeah, well, not much damage. I mean, stuff falling off shelves, that kind of damage, but we're not looking at any serious stuff. So I'm feeling really happy about that, and especially the coast didn't get pounded with a tsunami. That's always a good day, too.
That was what I was worried about, because she's just right off the bay in Charleston. So
Yeah.
Good.
So what else is on your mind? You called for something else, I think. I forget what that is, but go ahead. It's all right.
Yeah. Originally, my husband and I got COVID before it actually became a thing nationally or even in the news or anything. Mm-hmm. And it affected our lungs. And then we weren't sick for 4 years, not even a sniffle. And then this last June, we got COVID again. And I had lots of friends that had COVID, my mother-in-law, a couple of my really good friends, and they experienced hair loss. So the first time we had it, we didn't experience really anything except our lungs. This time, oh my God, Bill, we are like losing hair by the handfuls.
Really?
Now, this was in June, and as far as the after for the shot, I have friends that range from 41 to 60 that have had heart attacks. They've had to have stents put in. One of my friends who's younger, quite younger than me, and she's having so many health problems with her heart right now. So it's the shot, I just feel like they should have never forced children, first of all, to get the shot.
Well, yeah. The other thing I was going to mention, though, is now, do you have it right now? I'm just curious. You just gave a cough.
No,
okay.
I'm just getting over whatever the cruddy crap is going on.
Okay. All right. Good. I got that. I think when it comes right down to it, that what concerns me most is that we're going to go another 3-4 years. And now, instead of, about Biden going to blame the Trump administration for having botched COVID because they didn't do enough tyranny, now we're going to have 4 years of we're not really going to want to talk about this because, we're moving on. And are we going to get any reconciliation on this at all?
I don't know. I think that they really need to dive in to the virus itself, and I think they really need to dive into the after effects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
COVID, because so many people, like normal, common people, are experiencing these side effects from just even having COVID.
Yeah. I know there are a lot of people that are, I have relatives suffering from long COVID, various other things. So we're not alone on these kind of things.
Right.
I was so fortunate. Now, I may have been blessed with an extra good immune system. I don't know. I know that they say people with type O blood had an easier time of fighting it off.
Well, see, I have type O blood.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm type O negative. That may have had something to do with it. But I also, and I was the slave to the conspiracy theory. I took ivermectin prophylactically, preventively, like crazy, through the almost the entire pandemic, and I never got it. I've never had it. Still haven't had it up to this point.
What's scary, Bill, is, are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, what's really scary is that when you have surgery, okay, so my son had two hip surgeries, replacement. He's 31 years old. He just had his second one a couple weeks ago. And they were asking about blood transfusions. Well, they don't screen for people who have had the vaccine when they donate blood.
Very interesting point. Yeah. Yes. Are we looking at, are you going to get antibodies passed along, or are you going to get prions and clot shot refuse being passed on?
We're talking about clotting, like people dying from clots. And we were terrified for our son when he went in, because these are like major surgeries. I mean, they're like taking your hip off and putting a new one on.
Yikes.
And I'm getting ready to have knee replacement surgery. And because I have type O, it's like, well, I've been told you can go in prior, like up to 2 months, and have your blood taken and have like a stockpile of your own blood if you have an operation.
Might not be a bad idea, huh? That's what you're thinking?
I think that they should disclose if somebody, obviously they can test to see if somebody's had a shot, you know, the shot, and not give them that blood if it's going to cause other issues for people.
That might be a question for some morning. I mean, do you think that the blood banks should screen for the...
I definitely do.
All right. Appreciate the call. Interesting. That's thought-provoking. Wow. 17 after 8. Kim Komando Digital Update will be coming up here in just a moment, too, and then more of your calls. Congressman Cliff Benz will check in, too, around 8:30.
This hour of the Bill Myers Show is sponsored by Fontana Roofing. For roofing, gutters, and sheet metal services, visit FontanaRoofingServices.com.
Matt here with an urgent message from the Josephine County Republican Party. Similar to what President Trump experienced, politically motivated citizens...
LinkedIn.com/Kim to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. That's LinkedIn.com/Kim.
Hear KMED in Grants Pass on 105.9 K290 AF Rogue River in South Jackson County on 106.7 K294 AS Ashland.
22 after 8. Let's get the talk party started here, continuing with your calls. 770-5633-770-KMED. Breaking news that the Daniel Penny jury is apparently hung on the manslaughter charge. They do not have unanimous decision on this one. So there were some other charges there, too. Now, the manslaughter charge was the most serious of the charge. So they're deadlocked on this one, hung. And we're not sure what the judge is going to do with the other charges, what might be going on. I hope he goes free. I really do. What else is on your mind here, too? Let's go to Brad. Brad, you're up here. Good morning. Welcome. What's on your mind?
Bill, good morning. We need national voting reform. You know, I mean, here we are. We're one day before Pearl Harbor's anniversary, December 6th, and we just got our election certified. It doesn't take that long. You know, the first election I voted in was 1972. We knew what the answer to that thing was within, I think, 3 or 4 days. Everybody knew what it was.
Yeah, this idea that we continue to count and count and count, and that we continue to count until the Democrats get the right result. It's kind of my opinion, a conspiracy theory Thursday opinion. This is ridiculous. It's insanity.
Well,
how we run this?
It's a national election. We need a national standard. We need ID, right? Mandatory ID, and we need mandatory metrics for the states to follow to participate in the vote. That's it. We just can't let this kind of nonsense keep going on. It's ridiculous.
I agree. You'll get no disagreement with me. I'm going to ask Cliff about that. He's going to be on here in a few minutes. He might have an interesting take.
If
there is a time to do, you know, normally I'm not a fan of having to nationalize something, but it is quite obvious that many, many, many different styles of presidential and national elections ain't working. Just isn't. Even though we had a decent outcome, so to speak, with the presidential results, it wasn't a good election. You know what I mean?
What I'm getting at here? In Arizona, where Carrie Lake was running for the Senate, Arizona went for Trump significantly, but somehow with Carrie Lake's election, as they counted and counted and counted, they found that in the same areas where Trump won, somehow she was defeated by her Democrat opponent. It just doesn't add up. It doesn't make sense.
No, doesn't make sense, and which means that for all this talk about, oh, well, the cheat wasn't in. Of course the cheat was in. The cheat was in just a different way, okay? I appreciate the call. Thanks for that, Brad. 770-5633. Let me go to line 4. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome. Hello?
Hello.
Hi, who's this?
This is Owen.
Owen, how are you?
This is fairly quick. There's a new book in the Jackson County Library. It happens to come out of the Jacksonville Library, but you can request it. It's called Human Transit, and it's basically about public transit.
Oh.
And so it's put on by, believe it or not, the author lives in Portland, Oregon. Of course, it's all about their piece. And it's kind of interesting from the fact that you can see how they build their case. And he's been doing this for a long time. And I saw this and I said, Bill might be interested sometime in the future. So
Human Transit, the name of the book, huh?
That's the name of the book.
What was the case that was being made? Did you read it, or did you just kind of leaf through it?
I'm in the middle of it right now.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Yeah.
What is your overall impression of it here so far?
Well, they bypass the value of being able to go when you want, where you want, at whatever speed you want. And it's about, well, you have to become more used to, like, you were living in a big city where you have to be social and go along with the crowd.
I do find it fascinating that the typical urban planner today, which comes out of a left-wing globalist worldview for the most part here, I do believe that what you see a lot of this is the value of someone's time is irrelevant. Have you noticed that?
Well, they go right into it, into the introduction.
You have a limited amount of time, and the way that the urban planners are doing that, if it takes you an hour to travel because you're on public transit, well, that's okay. It's just what you have to pay to be a social society. Now, there's nothing wrong with having good, efficient transit services because there is a need for that, but they tend to look at our time as being worthless, like there's no value of it, and time spent in, if it takes a long time to get from point A to point B, well, even like with the electric car charge. So what if it takes an hour or two or more to charge your car rather than 5 minutes to fill up a regular vehicle, right? Right? It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Interesting. I'm going to look that up. Human transit. I'll see. Maybe we can bring them on. And, it's good to know what they're talking about because Oregon tends to...
The author's name is Jarrett Walker.
Jarrett Walker. I'm going to write that down and look him up.
I don't have the book in front of me, but I just grabbed a moment and said, hey, here's some possible information. But it shows how they go about their way of thought and why their way of doing things is the proper way.
Mm-hmm. They know just what we need, and they're going to give it to us good and hard, even when we don't ask for it. Yeah. All right. Hey, appreciate the tip, and I will look up Jarrett and see if we can bring him on because it's good to know what they're thinking because a lot of their policy gets done. Thanks for the call. It is 827 at KMED, 99.3 KBXG.
Who'll Stop the Rain is a classic 19...
PC Mouse users compensate for their testimonials, sponsored by Age of Learning.
You're hearing The Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
And it's also streamed on KMED.com. I think we have him. I think the congressman is called right now. Congressman Cliff Betts, is that you?
Yes, Bill. How are you this morning?
I'll tell you. Let me tell you. You guys are right on it. You are absolutely on time. You said 8:30, and there you are. And just as I'm getting ready to slide on, there you are. Welcome back to the show. How are you doing this morning, Congressman?
It's cold here. It's really cold. So kind of like home. Surprising.
Yeah, I suppose so. Maybe fewer earthquakes, that's all. But fortunately, we did okay out of that.
I hope you. Yeah.
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 Hey, wanted to talk with you about a couple of things, and something that has been on my mind here is the Democrats continue to count votes and count votes and count votes, and I'm just looking at how things have played out over the last 30 days as far as election season goes here in the United States of America. And the election season has been interesting as the vote counts continue and continue, and we don't have anything right away. And California just counts and counts and counts forever, just recently wrapping up. And as the count continues to go on and on and on, the Republican win was continuing to shrink. And now we have a slim 4 or 5 seat majority. And it doesn't feel right. Is it not time for national election standards and rules and that we stop this whole idea of the vote by mail in one state, and there's in person here. It's ID in this state. There's no ID in our state. You know, all that kind of thing. Is there any talk about that in Congress to do some reform here coming up? Any thoughts on that? Is that a topic of discussion?
Right. Well, it was the topic of discussion when I first got here 4 years ago, because the Democrats wanted the federal government to take over all of voting. And I think their H.R. 1 back then was focused on the federal government becoming the main player in all elections. And I think most people in the states were not supportive of the feds taking over all of elections. So the challenge is, how in the world do you address a situation like we see in California, like you just described, and my good friend John Duarte was the last Republican standing, and he lost by like 150 votes. It was extremely sad, and it was, you just described it, the ballots kept coming in and coming in. I will tell you that we sent through our National Republican Congressional Committee, NRCC, we sent 70 people down to help Congressman Duarte in that race, and to help down in L.A. With the Michelle Steele's race. We had some of the best help we've ever had in trying to cure ballots, but the dragging in of ballots and the obvious opportunity for shenanigans is hugely disturbing, and particularly when you lose somebody as valuable as John Duarte. It's extremely sad.
And by the way, I'm not making a claim that I have evidence that there was hanky there. It just doesn't look and or sound or feel right. That there are just things that seem to happen that the longer the count goes, it's like you can almost predict it, how the outcome will be. The longer it goes, the worse it ends up being for anyone who is to the right of, let's say, the host on The View. Okay. Just kind of, you know.
Yes. Well, I'm not disagreeing with you, but I would be very, very cautious about turning our elections over to the feds. I'd be very cautious there.
I would agree on that too. But there is something I would appreciate about a standard set of rules which everyone tends to have to follow. I appreciate federalism. I really do. I can appreciate the federalism. There are things that the states do that states do better. There are things that the federal government can do better. And it would seem to me that especially congressional elections need to be congressional and presidential elections. There needs to be a tighter standard that I would think that all the states should be following here, because it gets so loosey-goosey, especially out on the West Coast, which seems to be by design. I mean, I'm saying this about our own state, you know, Oregon, for that example, right?
I'm with you on the need to have standards that can't be violated, but I would just say you have to be careful, because when the Democrats do take over, the standards they have are going to be quite different. That'd be my suggestion.
Okay, so, all right, yeah. Point well taken. What about Owyhee Canyon? This push to make it a monument here. Are you involved in that fight whatsoever? I noticed that. Both of our state senators seem to be, or the U.S. senators from Oregon, seem to be absolutely thrilled with the possibility of locking up more land in the state of Oregon. Do you have an opinion on that?
So I've been involved with that up to my nose for many years. And of course, I live in Malheur County, where the monument has been suggested. It was actually feared that President Obama was going to establish a 2 million acre monument out of a 6 million acre county, which is Malheur County.
Well, yeah. Think about that. Just on the face of it, there, Congressman, 2 million acres, 1/3 out of the entire county, would be locked away. Right? That's what you were just mentioning there. Right?
Yeah. And we opposed it. I opposed it. I've opposed the monument from day one, and helped the community organize to try to head it off. But I do want to be clear on one thing. Senator Wyden is also opposed to the monument.
Oh, he is. Oh, it must have been Senator Merkley then that came out in favor.
That's correct.
Okay,
that is correct.
Sorry for the error.
No, it's okay. But I would be not approaching this correctly if I failed to call out that Senator Wyden's been trying to help avoid a monument designation. But I've brought a bill that is consistent with the bill in many ways, but not all, with one that Wyden has brought to try to address this issue in a way that is based on local, careful, thoughtful work by a whole bunch of people to get something that keeps cattle on the land, reduces the invasion of weeds and other things that are trying to take over those millions of acres, and also preserves our access to it, avoids a monument such like Bears Ears, where they prevent now any hunting whatsoever on all of that huge area in Utah. So we're working on it, and we still have hope here in Washington, D.C. to have a land bill that would address these issues based on a 7-year effort by local communities and Senator Wyden's office, and now, of course, I've been working on it when I go home. But it's a great big deal, Bill, and we're very, very hopeful that we will avoid a monument designation.
What is the status of dam removal attempts up on the northern part of the state? And this is not the Columbia, Snake River is what I was thinking. I know that you have held many hearings on this, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think you're hoping that we can avoid any further Klamath River, just ram it through and blow things up and walk away kind of stuff going on. Can you bring us up to how that's looking at this point and moving into 2025?
Thank you so much for asking. First of all, we have a bill for the Klamath that is designed to protect farmers and to make sure that those who took out those four dams, thus exposing the two remaining dams, which obviously I support the continued existence of, to get them into proper fish passage shape and make sure that it's not the farmers that have to pay for it, because that would be totally unfair. It's a consequence of taking those dams out that these repairs are necessary, and that needs to be paid for by those who took the dams out. But that bill has made it through a hearing, made it through markup, and we're hoping to have it passed perhaps as early as next week. Note I said perhaps, because nothing is predictable here. As to the dams on the Snake River up on the north side of Oregon, I've been working to make sure that everybody understands that if those four dams came out, electrical rates could double. The Biden administration is doing everything in its power to try to lock in the procedures they put in place to get rid of those dams. Bill, here, this is a situation that involves the Biden administration using the courts as a device to prevent the Congress from stepping in and trying to reverse the type of processes that have been put in place by the Biden administration. And so we're looking now into how best to head off this what I'll call overreach by federal courts, and do what needs to be done to save the navigation up that river, mm-hmm. and to save the electrical generation, and to save all of the good things that come from those dams. And obviously, I could go on and on, but we are working almost every day on this issue. And so I'm glad you asked.
Yeah, we're looking at 15, 16, 17 cents per kilowatt hour right now. Now, I'm talking about, you know, delivered to the home, cost of electricity here in Southern Oregon. And, you know, the thought of doubling that takes us into California power rates, essentially, doesn't it? Yes. Isn't that what that would be about?
It does. And let me make sure, the southern part of Oregon is less affected by Bonneville power rates, but it's still affected. And so when I say rates are going to double, I'm talking primarily about the 3 million people in Washington and most of Oregon, but not southern Oregon as much. You guys are somewhat secure. I will tell you, Bill, though, that the environmental push to wean everybody off of natural gas and coal is going to and is now already resulting in much higher rates as people suddenly realize that wind and solar is intermittent and also extraordinarily expensive. You're going to see these rates continue to go up unless we can figure out some way of reversing some of that. Now, that's why President Trump is doing what I think is right in appointing people to these various commissions and departments and to the cabinet that will help us reverse some of that craziness.
Congressman Cliff Betz is on the program today. I wanted to just touch on a bit of this. So the power is a big deal, and this is these are existential threats here. They're permanent increases to our cost of living here in Southern Oregon, and although we may not be as directly connected to the Bonneville Power System's rates if those dams are removed, we use a good 20-30% of our power right now, and you need something like that, like Bonneville, which can be brought up or spun up when we need the electricity to make up for the chaotic and intermittent nature of all of the wind and solar panels that Pacific Power seems to be installing in Southern Oregon right now. Would you agree with me on that? And we'd be cutting our throats in some ways.
Yeah, so it's extremely complicated. Let me just say that I am working to stay as chair of the Water Subcommittee, which does have jurisdiction over mm-hmm. Bonneville Power. And I'm also working to get on Energy and Commerce, which has overlapping jurisdiction over Bonneville Power, but it also has extensive jurisdiction over other aspects of electrical generation, our grid, for example. What people need to be concerned about is the advent of artificial intelligence and its huge demand for huge amounts of power. And here's the deal. When you talk about existential, we need to be a leader, if not the leader, I hope the leader, in all things artificial intelligence. But that takes two things, three things. One is the chips. Two is huge amounts of electrical power. And three is data. And so we in the Northwest are blessed with lots of electrical power, but it's being slurped up by server farms and AI. Artificial intelligence. How we approach this is going to be incredibly important. That's why I'm anxious. I hope to end up on the Energy and Commerce Committee along with the Water Committee, because I think the two will be integrally involved in these discussions.
I would agree with you, Congressman. And what makes that so serious when you think about it, the last thing you want is in order for Facebook to be able to have its data center and be able to do all its artificial intelligence or Intel or Microsoft or whoever is going to be doing these various data centers, if all of a sudden, in order for them to have their AI profits, the rest of we folks here are screwed with 25 cents a kilowatt hour power, when especially in peak times when it's cold in the winter or hot in the summer. What's the point of being an AI superpower if you can't keep the lights on and at an affordable price for people, for regular people in their lives?
I have a hard time disagreeing with you. The challenge for us in the Northwest is to make sure that we understand exactly what you just said, that if people will welcome in Amazon or Microsoft or Google and say, hey, yay, we've got a number of new jobs. But what's happening is your electrical rates are going to go up, and they have been. But it's not just that huge demand, which is a big part of it. It's also this shift to intermittent power. So you, instead of having, as you well know, it takes three windmills to generate reliable power, compared to one dam. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a very, very the kilowatts generated by those two are so different. But I'm working on trying to make sure we preserve our existing infrastructure, and why in the world would we take out dams when we know we're short of power, and people's rates are going up? It makes no sense at all. Anyway, but you and I are together on this issue, Bill.
There's okay,
no
glad to hear this, Congressman Cliff Benz. Cliff, I wanted to ask you, what about getting a reconciliation package? Because this is first off, I guess. Are we in danger of a lot of Christmas trees being shoved down the gullet, in which a lot of bad spending gets baked in the cake here in the final weeks of this particular Congress before the new Congress and new administration comes in? What is that looking like? And what is budgeting trying to get some control on the immense amounts of overspending looking like here for 2025? Any thoughts on that? Both. It's two-part question, I guess. What do you think?
Yes, right. Well, it was quite interesting. I enjoyed attending with the rest of we Republicans yesterday. Most of us, I went over to the auditorium in the Visitor Center here in D.C., and we got to listen to Elon Musk and Mr. Ramaswamy talk about their plans on this DOGE group to make the government more efficient, which is another word for saying spending less money. It was kind of a not particularly productive meeting for an hour or so, but that was because people were throwing out different ideas on how to save money. I will say that it's a lot easier to talk about it than to actually do it, because if you're busy cutting federal investments in local communities, you have to be really careful. I will mention that, Musk has talked about doing away with the F-35 program. Well, that would be rather damaging to Klamath Falls,
right?
Since about $140, $150 million a year comes into Klamath Falls because of the F-35s that are probably going to be there next year.
And this is the challenge that you're talking about, in which everything that one congressman or one senator thinks is a waste for one district ends up being a lifeline in another district here, and yet we can't continue to borrow another $1 trillion every 90 days, you know, and go into debt, right? So we're up against some interesting.
No disagreement. The challenge in each of these instances is trying to figure out if there's some better way of getting rid of wasteful government spending. But the other thing that came up, of course, many times yesterday was the fact that federal employees are not going back to work. So how much production are we getting out of them? I was kind of funny. Both Musk and Ramaswamy were talking about that we don't live in a democracy anymore. We live in a bureaucracy. It was really quite interesting how the two of them have been working together with Speaker Johnson and with President-elect Trump to try to figure out ways to approach these really difficult issues.
Well, you know, Congressman, something to keep in mind, and I was reading something on Mises Institute the other day, which I think is excellent reading, but the actual number of official government employees in the federal government are actually less than they were, let's say, 1990. So it's actually gone down. What has exploded is the insane amount of spending with government contractors. And, you know, and so it's almost like you have to look at this as not going after necessarily the employees, except for going after the employees to take out the people who are disruptive and not doing a great job. Okay, you know, that kind of thing. But there's another side of this that says you just have to reduce government spending, period, in order to have some effect here, because lots of contractors are, in essence, federal employees, yet they're not officially government employees. See what I'm getting at?
Yes, and that's been a problem for many, many, many years. I will say that there is a general complete consensus among all 217 of us, because right now a number of people, although they're going to be here for another couple of months, but they're going to be gone because, as you know, President-elect Trump reached into the House and took a number of my colleagues and put them in different government, you know, jobs, like on the cabinet and whatnot.
Yes, yes.
So we have basically, according to Speaker Johnson, 217 people on the Republican side, and the Democrats have 215. That gives us two votes. And so when it comes to reducing spending, if someone comes to me and says, okay, we're going to take away the F-35 program and you're not going to have that.
And there's no way you could agree to that, is there, right?
It would be no. I mean, what in the world? We for all kinds of reasons, need the F-35 program. If they want to phase it out over 50 years, so I'm happy to start talking. But these kinds of things are going to be extremely difficult to do when you have a two-person majority. Actually, we only have one, because if one person changed their vote, we're in a tie. And so any of the questions that you ask, all very good ones, about will we keep the government open? Will we see more spending? Will we see a continuing resolution that takes us into the next year? These questions are all going to be coming up over the next 2 weeks, and we've been working on them literally every day, and frankly, for the last couple of months. But I'll tell you, if much of what's going to happen is going to be driven by President-elect Trump, and what we'll be doing is turning to him, because here's why: if people don't want to go along with whatever is coming down the pike, it will be up to him to call them and say, "Hey, Congressman or Congresswoman, we're going to need your help here," and it'll be up to him to help bring everybody along. But that's what's going on. There's quite a bit of waiting to see what it is that he has in mind that he wants to do. And you can see that every day he's appointing more and more people to these various commissions and departments. Many have not yet been confirmed. Others are getting ready to go to work. And we'll see how that all pans out. But it's going to be an extremely interesting 2 weeks, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, there's a big battle here. It's like, Everybody knows what needs to be done, but nobody, and I'm talking about Democrat, Republican, nobody can intentionally cut their district, right? Isn't that honestly what we're talking about, these challenges on these kind of conversations? Otherwise, people commit suicide politically, right?
So, yes, that you've hit it on the nose. It's not, but it's not easy to talk about any of this. But one thing everybody, I think, understands is that much of our spending is in the entitlement arena. And when you start talking about two-thirds of it, and so no one wants to talk about entitlements. And I don't blame anybody for not wanting to talk about them. They're extraordinarily important. But when Ramaswamy and Elon Musk come in and say we're going to have to save $2 trillion a year, by the way, they are correct. There are different ways of doing it. And let's hope that the ones that we have to adopt, those changes, are not going to be damaging to the people that are absolutely dependent upon these entitlements. So we've got to work our way through it extremely carefully because so many people are so dependent upon those kinds of payments.
Wow. When you only have a one or two vote majority, is the one or two vote majority I remember how the Freedom Caucus was able to blow up a lot of stuff just with even just a handful of votes. Is it even more so this time around in Congress next year, you think, that it's even more precarious than the last Congress? What do you think here, Congressman?
Well, it's hard to imagine it being more precarious than it was the last 2 years. But the answer is yes. The last time around, we had like four or five spare votes. Now we have, frankly, we're going to have like one. And I'm not joking. And so, of course, it's more precarious. That means every person is king or every person is queen, depending upon it, because they can go into the speaker and say, you know what, I've decided I'm not going to do this. And you're going to have to convince me why. Well, it's going to be up to the speaker and the leadership team to convince people to go along for the ride. And it's going to be extraordinarily difficult. That's why I say President-elect Trump is going to be a major player in helping convince people that they need to help move the political ship in a common direction.
Including getting the Senate to get in line, too. And the Senate tends to be extremely independent-minded and looking at things very differently from Congress. Would that be a fair assessment here?
Yes. Well, of course, the Senate still is controlled by the Democrats. So in this next 2 weeks, this is most assuredly not President Trump is not president yet.
Yeah, no, I'm speaking of 2025. I mean, once that...
Yeah, 2025. Even then, it takes 60, except for reconciliation, 60 votes, and thus you still have to, round up a bunch of the folks from the Democrat side to help get around votes that require 60, which is everything except reconciliation.
Congressman, I appreciate you taking a few minutes. I know you're going to get back and get some votes in there. Thank you for having taken the time you have, and keep us in the loop, all right? Thank you very much. Be well.
Thank you. Take care, Bill.
Yes, Congressman Cliff Bentz, and had to cut that a little bit short because I know that like at 9 o'clock they're starting to do some votings and he had to be called away for that. So things were turning into a pumpkin. That's also why I wasn't going to calls on this particular thing, folks. Okay, 770-5633. If you had some comment now, happy to take that in the final few minutes of the Bill Myers Show.
This hour of the Bill Myers Show is sponsored by Fontana
since 1971. Thanks to you, they're great customers.
Good morning. This is News Talk 106.3 KMED, and you're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
859 KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass. Appreciate you having been waking up this morning. By the way, thanks to Clouser for sponsoring the podcast, too. You can get those on BillMyersShow.com or also through KMED.com. And Clouser Drilling, big sponsor of that. We appreciate their work there. Let me go to Terry. Terry! You wanted to talk about Congressman Cliff Bentz. Had him on for about 20-something minutes or so. And you were thinking about the election issue that I started off with him?
Yeah, just on these counts that take forever and, how the Republican lead slowly dwindles away the longer their count goes on. Don't they have watchers, Republican watchers, that also are watching what these guys are counting? So what I'm confused on is aren't we watching that? And if there's issues, won't they say something?
I don't know if the watchers are there right now. I think the main issue, though, is that in mail-in ballots, with mail-in elections, the rules are very loosey-goosey. It's like the problem that we have, to, in my opinion here, Terry, are the ballots that just dribble in day after day after day. And, well, in Oregon, you're supposed to have a postmark. Oh, then they pass another law that says it doesn't have to have a postmark.
Well, and then something's got to get fixed with that, Bill. I mean, there's got to be people on both sides watching how these things are getting counted.
But there's no way. Okay, you have a ballot that comes in that doesn't have a postmark. They still got to count it. So they count it. You could sit there and say, hey, there's not a postmark on it. Well, there's a House bill that was just passed that that says that doesn't really matter, you know. That,
well, is there a bill that's passed that said even if it's not postmarked that they count?
Yes.
It?
Yes. And then it's interesting what happens then as the votes dribble in. It has the appearance of impropriety, right?
Oh, I mean, yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, more than just the appearance of it. So, yeah, I'm right there with you. But that's what we have. That's why I was asking about federal rules on elections, because we have no standard on ID. We have no requirement, really, that they're supposed to find out if someone is a citizen or even if they're alive. But anyway, I appreciate the call. I might be exaggerating a little bit on the alive part. Of course, there is Chicago's reputation. Hello, Ron in Grants Pass. Go ahead. Fire away.
Yeah. On the AI power demand problem that we're facing, we need to have a law that grandfathers in domestic, commercial, industrial users at the outset that we have right now, so that they're not affected by any AI demand increase.
In fact, if anything, if you're going to do that, regular people just trying to live their lives must have priority, and data centers must be paying the cost. But, you know, they don't want to do that. You know, they don't want to do that. They want cheap power for the data centers and people like, and then clowns like us, then we turn our dishwasher on, we get hosed. You know, we turn our dishwasher on at the same time because, gosh, and maybe we'd like to actually cook dinners at 5 o'clock, you know, then we get hosed. All right. Hey, Bill, we got about 45 seconds. You want to make a good quote going off to the weekend? Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say dams have always been considered base load electricity.
Yes.
We need to flip that into making them peak load. And when the sun is shining, dial down the dams and save the water behind it. And then when the peak comes and the alternate energy isn't producing, open up the dams and let them take over. It's like a battery, only it's better. It's scalable, right?
Yeah, I guess that works if you have a reservoir, but point right. Well taken. Hey, I appreciate the call there, Bill. Email Bill at BillMeyerShow.com. Have a wonderful weekend. Mark Lee Van Camp and Robbins coming up, the Jukebox on 99.3, and we'll talk again Monday morning.
One of each K4 VIN 016551 MSRP 24145 Telluride VIN 576420 MSRP 43330 5982 due 10K miles per year.